want to know how to find it. Seek it out when they hide it. You know it's in the bag when it's an easy grab. But come on, take a chance now. Go, 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 geocache, geocache. And if you need help, we're right there in a flash. If you got a question, just call in and ask. Uncover the stash. All the geocaching podcasts. The geocaching podcast.
Welcome to the Geocaching Podcast, episode 397, recorded live on April 8th, 2015. I'm your host, Head Hard Hat with
Scott Burks,
Steven Zat Infinitum,
and Taz427.
You can join our chat room and watch our live video stream, plus participate with us as we record this episode. All this and more can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.com/live. Be sure to contact us via our voicemail line at 630-31-VOICE. And also find us on Twitter at geocachingpodcast.com/Twitter and Facebook at geocachingpodcast.com/Facebook. This episode is sponsored by cache-advance.com for all your geocaching needs. Cache-advance.com. Go find it. Yay! Chaz isn't dead. He's got his voice.
Were we expecting him to be dead?
I didn't yes. know. Yeah, Chad was not feeling well earlier in the week.
Oh.
And he sent a little email, something like, I'm dying, and my throat is on fire. And I'm like, oh, here we go. He picked up the bubonic plague in Brazil, and now he's paying for it. Montezuma's revenge, bubonic plague, something's going on.
Got the crabs in.
Oh, no.
Thank goodness for broad-spectrum antibiotics. That's all I got to say.
Wonders of modern medicine. Well, I'm glad you're feeling good, sir.
Quick shot of penicillin is good, isn't it?
Yeah, we'll leave that right there. So, yeah, lots of good stuff this week. Before we get into Chad's Brazilian, we'll be talking about a lot of... I can't help it. It's right there. So, yeah, a lot of good stuff. All right, fine. We had a good time this last weekend going after the 150 Civil War geotrail here in North Kakalaki. My wife Amy and I went all over the Goldsboro area. Man, that is a lot of fun. You go out there, and if you want to learn history. Now, I am from Michigan, which is interesting in contrast being down here in the South with a wife who is from down here. And so a lot of times I found out when you go to some of these places, you can't yell, go blue. It just doesn't work. And so, yeah, not good. But the one thing that Amy did say was how cool it was that even being raised here, there's a lot of things she just simply didn't know about the Civil War. And just spending an entire afternoon driving around, finding these very cool geocaches. And this is going to take a while because there's 150 of them out there, and there are geocoins that you can obtain by going through. But it's a lot of fun. I really had a great time, and I look forward to going all over the state. This isn't a geo trail like it's every 600 feet type thing. It's very well sparsely placed all over the place at specific here's historical site. So if you're at this area where Sherman crossed over this particular stream right here to head for the particular battle that happened at that time, this was the spot. I mean, it's really cool. Or to walk around an entire battlefield that took place as well. It's an awesome thing. Mm. So, yeah, that's very cool. Mr. Scott, how about yourself?
Did you tell your wife, spoiler alert, that the South lost?
You know, I tell her that now. And I say, hey, by the way, honey, the North won again, and they didn't even fire a shot. They don't like that down here.
No,
I don't. Yeah, my wife, I don't tell my wife that. You know, I want to wake up in the morning.
I forgot. I went out last Friday night. I did not have the boys. So we went out, and we got a good number. I got about 18 caches. Got some really high DTs, which was really nice. But the best was 2 days ago, Monday. Monday, woke up Monday, and for anybody who doesn't know, I have an FTF streak going. It's like 5 years. It's like since like November 2008. That's more than 5 years, isn't it? November 2008, since then I've gotten a cache every month, an FTF every month.
Wow.
Since then, yeah. So a couple times it's been, you know, it's been real close on whether or not I was going to keep the streak going. But no, I woke up Monday morning at like 7:15 and looked at my phone, and sure enough, a couple of caches about 10 miles away. I'm like, well, I gotta go for them. You know, it's 10 yep. miles. It's early enough. I got to make a run for it. So made a run for them before work and got one of them. So the streak nice. Lives. Another awesome. Month. The streak survives. Yes.
Wow. How about yourself, Corey?
Well, you know, I was gone last week, apparently. I was running around, you know, 1,000 miles down and back up from Utah, Montana, and I was able to catch some park and grabs on the whole trip down and back, and even found some that I was able to fill my Jasmer challenge back from 2002.
Awesome.
So, yeah, park and grabs that stay around for a while. I was shocked. So
nice.
Now, have they named a trail after you yet? After all the times you go back and forth?
No, but there was. I did pick up a couple on the "Daddy, I really need to pee" geo trail.
Isn't that what maces are for? I was just saying.
Yeah, no, there are some maces, and no, I've got some people who really want me to go down. And hit some maces because there's some caches named after me down there. But, yeah, it's I don't know. I like the colder areas now.
Mm-mm-mm. Mr. Taz, you're alive, and we are so glad yes. you are here tonight. How about yourself?
I spent a lot of time sleeping, recovering from the trip. So I had planned on going to an event on Monday, but I was too sick to make it, but made it to a lunchtime event today, and that's all I've done for the week.
Yeah, no doubt. Cause now, did you ever find out was the illness brought on by being over there or just happened to be weak because of the trip and caught something here?
I think I was weak from the trip and caught something here, and it's going around here. Actually, there's a couple people at the today's event that were coughing and hacking as well, and it's like, uh-huh. It's like, yeah.
Wow.
You all got it too.
Good stuff. Glad you're better. All right, let's move on to the podcast roundup, letting our viewers know what's going on in the geocaching podcasting community. And what's coming up this week on GeoGearheads is episode 171, Puzzler 26. Noted hider, Puzzler 26, joins Daryl W4 and the Bad Cop from the Metro Detroit GeoGearhead Studio. I know where that is. I've been in there. For a look at what goes on into creating his great hides, watch live at 9:10 p.m. Eastern, 6:10 p.m. Pacific, this Thursday for some inspiration to create your own geocaches. And also on Thursday, a.k.a. tomorrow, the GeoSnippets Reboot Podcast. Are you ready for the challenge? It is time for Head Hard Hat's geocaching quiz number 3. That's right. Believe it or not, we are up to quiz number 3, and people just love this. We give away prizes for a drawing. All you have to do is turn in your scores on how you did. No, we don't tell anybody, but it's a lot of fun to do. And we've got some challenging questions this time. I think we got some gotchas. So let's see how you guys do tomorrow on the GeoSnippets Reboot Podcast. And finally, we ask you fine folks, if you go over to geocachingpodcast.com on the right-hand side, you're going to see a logo that says, please become a patron. We have started up the Patreon program for the Geocaching Podcast, and we have quite a few already started with this, and we thank you. Basically, this is a great way for you fine folks, if you get any entertainment value from us. little nuggets of information, please consider becoming a patron and help support the show. We greatly appreciate it. We've got a couple of rewards that we're going to have set up. One will be if we reach a set amount of money by the end of the year, which will cost the costs for all the things that deal with the podcast, we will have a huge mega event where you guys will be able to come in and through our hangouts and celebrate with us. And it'll be for all the patrons that contributed. And also, for a fee, you can also receive exclusive content from either if we have shows that go a little long that we have extra material, and also from the hosts. Every once in a while we're going to have them do some quick tips that we're going to send just to our patrons as well. So if you please consider going to geocachingpodcast.com, clicking on the Become a Patron icon, and read up on this. It literally helps keep the lights on and the show going, and we greatly appreciate all you helping and supporting the show. All right, no news tonight, but we do have, once I push on the button over here, the geocaching question of the day. Let's give this a listen. Geocaching question of the day.
Hey, cachers, this is Lookout Lisa from Cache Advance, and I'm your host for the geocaching question of the day. Well, Cache Advance is your geocaching hub for all your caching needs, including the Cache Crate, a monthly subscription box of geocaching and outdoor gear. Well, Mondays through Thursdays, we ask our followers on Twitter, Facebook, and Google+ a question about geocaching. We recently asked, do you use watch lists for geocaches or trackables? Well, after tallying all the answers, we found that most all cachers do use watch lists for both caches and trackables. So here's what we heard. Laura on Facebook shared, yes, I do, mostly for caches that are on my list of wanting to do. Kurt on Facebook shared, both. It's a great way to see where TBs and coins reappear after, quote, disappearing. Well, Chris on Facebook was our only dissenter. He shared, no lists. If I find one, I like for it to be a total surprise. Well, Austin on Google+ shared, I use watch lists for caches I can't find. That way I can later see if it was my fault or if other cachers can't find them either. So either an arg or an I knew it was missing. Now, Austin, I can totally relate to that as well. Well, Dano on Google+ shared, I watch every cache I DNF so that once people find it, I know to go back and who to email for an extra hint. Well, as always, we really enjoyed hearing about watch lists, and you can too. If you follow us, Cache Advance, on Facebook, Twitter, and Google+, for the geocaching question of the day. Thanks and happy caching.
All right, Lisa, thank you so much for the geocaching question of the day. And now we are very, very pleased to hand the mic over to the one, the only, Taz427, a.k.a. Chad, who went out and successfully survived a trip to Brazil geocaching. Dad, take her away. What happened with this? Everybody's got a zillion questions, so I'm just going to sit back and let you talk some and go from there.
Yeah, I wasn't sure exactly all the areas that people wanted to know, so I kind of put together a little section on planning, a little section on cost, caching in the park in general, and then actually going for the cache. So I'm not sure what order you wanted that in, but
what you have is perfect, and I'm sure we got a lot of questions as we go.
Let me start out with something before you do this. What surprised you didn't expect? Was there anything you didn't anything out of the ordinary you didn't expect, or was it monetarily, or was it cash related, or anything like?
I would say
I wish I would have thought of this before I left, kind of thing.
The water, I expected to pick up bottled water there, and I expected the vast majority of the bottled water to be non-carbonated. turns out that about half the bottled water there that they have on the shelf tends to be carbonated.
Now, is it sparkling water where the stuff that tastes like Alka-Seltzer, or is it the fruit stuff that's just carbonated?
It's like sodium bicarbonate. And you taste the sodium bicarbonate in it, and that to me, I can't stand that. And actually, that was one of the comments I put into the planning on this was to mark a couple of the Walmarts along the way out of Sao Paulo and pick up some water and stuff. But when you're picking up water, get the blue ones with the blue caps on it that says Sim Gas on it. Sim means without, so without gas. And you won't have any problems. All of them indicate that they're mineral water. But
wow!
But the Sim Gas is the non-carbonated, and it tastes like the regular Evian or whatever that you pick up at the grocery store. So And I would highly recommend picking up water on the way out there. The water's probably fairly well drinkable. That's there in the park, but it is a well water. It can have bacteria in there. You know, your system might not be able to handle it. I also brought the tablets in case I needed to drink some of it so that I could kill the bacteria within there. But as far as on the planning side, you know, general caching equipment applies, you know, GPSR, compass, some real maps are always nice to have, bug spray, batteries, backup batteries, chargers, flashlights, those kinds of things.
How bad are the bugs?
The bugs were not too bad. Actually, their mosquitoes are very tiny there, but they're voracious. So I would definitely bring DEET with you, and like the 100% DEET. The 40% DEET wasn't quite good enough. I didn't get eaten up too badly, but one of my comrades got ate up pretty badly. She was scratching pretty badly, and I saw her today at the event, and she's looking like one of the characters from Survivor with all the bug bites. But other than that, and you know, some good 4-inch diameter beetles, you know, not too bad. One of the things that I would also recommend is bringing a small med kit, a traveling med kit. I actually had two with me, one that I already owned, and then a smaller one that I actually got in a cache crate from Cache Advance just a couple weeks back, and I decided to bring it along with me, and I had, since it's a little bit smaller, I had it in my backpack, and when we're hiking out there, a friend of mine got stung by a bee and had bee sting stuff on there, it's just sting stuff, not necessarily for bees, but, you know, kind of relieved that, and a Brazilian friend that we met out there also wound up cutting his hand on some rock and managed to get him nice and bandaged up, so, you know, made good use of the med kit. Thankfully, we didn't need to use it for anything any more severe, but definitely I would recommend bringing a med kit.
Is there anything that wouldn't be allowed to take over to Brazil where they would just kind of say, no?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, if it's pretty much legal here in the U.S., I think it's going to be legal there. I wasn't told of anything, and nobody stopped me. I would say bring soap and shampoo. That's, you know, traditionally in hotels and stuff, that's provided, but it's not going to be provided at the lodge. You can buy some there. It's not expensive, it's nice to have it with you that first night. I only had the shampoo part, so I was using the shampoo for everything that first night. If you use data on your smartphone, you will definitely be roaming. So
make sure you pay for it.
Make sure you're willing to pay for it. You can pick up, if you have AT&T or T-Mobile, you can get GSM cards from companies like TIM down there. That are, you get a visitor's pass that isn't too expensive. Once you get inside the park, you're not going to have any data. There is one Wi-Fi hotspot in the park by the reception area that they allow you to use after 5 p.m. It's like drinking a swimming pool through a straw.
I mean, oh, wow.
It's dial-up speeds. So you can get emails out to loved ones, let people know that you're still alive, which is a good thing. But beyond that, don't expect to do much. I had to disable the automatic downloading of apps on my cell phone when I got into Wi-Fi access, because it would suck down, take down the network.
Wow.
So, but, you know, make sure that you have a pack with you that can carry your water, because you want to bring at least a liter with you, a couple, you know, 500 milliliter bottles of water to walk around with. If you're going to be out there for 3-4 hours on a hike, those type of things, I would bring a pack with you anyways to carry at least a small med kit, your water, your insecticide, any odds and ends, tradables that you might want to have with you.
That's awesome. Now, how much, when you actually got to the park itself, how much actual walking did you do? Was there much driving involved? How did that go, so we kind of get an idea of the geographical area and what you had to go through to get around?
It was a bit mixed. I mean, we would drive to kind of head of a trail and then start walking. The ape cache itself is about a mile back in. But that day, you know, there's three caches along the way, four if you count the where I go, if you started the where I go early, which we didn't, so we had to come back. But so that's 1 mile to get to the ape cache, and you have to backtrack from the ape cache back out so you can go up to Marante Velo. It's a view up at the top, and then swing back down around the backside through some stuff, and altogether it was about 4 miles with about a 1,000 feet of ascent and descent, and so, you know, we took our times at it. We spent a lot of time at some caches and at the viewpoint up at the top and at the ape cache itself. So we spent probably a good solid 4.5 hours on that four mile hike. It was a great day. That was pretty much the first day of caching, actually the morning of that caching. We did a little bit more caching that afternoon. So that's just an example of one day. When we did the waterfall hike, that was about a 3.5 mile hike with over 1,000 feet of elevation change during the hike, and we came up through the river basin and crossing the, I don't want to call it a river, it's more like a very large stream bed, and we're crossing back and forth over and back across the stream bed and came up there. There's a shorter way to do it that would have took a half an hour to get there, but taking 2.5 hours to get there through this other path was so much worth it, and got some incredible shots and things as well. So you wouldn't have got the scenic view and the real jungle feel if you had gone the other way. A lot of the paths and stuff are well groomed within the park, so you're not really doing a lot of bushwhacking. About the closest to bushwhacking is the last half a mile to the ape cache. You kind of split off this trail, and it's you probably would not have noticed the trail was there if there wasn't a cache that was placed about 100 feet in, and you kind of burst through and see, oh, there's another trail here. So that trail's kind of pretty well hidden, and then you're ducking under bamboo and climbing over the top of bamboo, and there's actually one that had been sliced about probably 3 feet off the ground and in the middle of the path. And
it's oh, lovely.
Like, yeah, if I fall over, it's like, you can impale yourself on that.
Oh, lovely. But,
nice.
So, you know, it was an awesome trip. Gave it some atmosphere and stuff. And we did see the tail of a green snake slithering up there. My son thinks it was a green viper. I'm like, no, it was probably a vine snake. It's like the green vipers are more of Africa and Asia. Still, it's kind of fun to see snakes in the wild.
I'd be running down the trail like a little girl. I absolutely is. Yeah, that's cool. So just out of curiosity, because when you picture Brazil, you picture all the Hollywood versions of it. What was it actually like? What was when you use the word atmosphere? What was it like? What was the foliage around there?
So within the park itself, the foliage was typical rainforest foliage, and you got the big banana leaves in there. You've got the bamboo. You've got the giant trees with the, you know, big twisted root systems around. I mean, it was pretty much like you would see in the movie of not Romancing the Stone. What was that movie?
Excellent movie, by the way.
But you know, one of those type of movies where they're sliding through the jungle. So I did actually. Boom, and it started to slide down, and it gets wet, and you will start sliding, and you got a lot of 20 to 30 degree grades, and even steeper for short whiles there that you will quite literally slide down through the stuff. So a lot of it was like that. But the trails themselves are really well groomed, and they tried to do their best to keep the water from running down it. They have they've used bamboo, cut slots, and used bamboo to kind of direct the rainwater off to the side of the trail. But when it's that humid and that moist, and you get rains periodically throughout there, it's still going to get slippery.
Yeah, no doubt. So. That's awesome. So, how many fortunes, mortgages, and back taxes from people did you have to get money from to do all this?
Not too bad. Airfare is usually between $800 and $1,300. I actually used flight miles, so that didn't cost me anything other than flight miles. The car, you can get a car for about between $400 to $600 a week. You know, we split it four ways, so that's about $100 to $150. Tolls and fuel for the whole trip was cost us about $100, so that's $25 for my portion. Food at the lodge, so this is for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, about $20 to $25. That's including soda, beer, etc. So not just the buffet, but you might want a beer or something after dinner and stuff. So they kind of put it all on the tab. So over the entire period, maybe $150. So it's actually not too unreasonable. Lodging was costing us $15 a day. It's pretty rudimentary lodging there in the park. You don't have any air conditioning. You don't have a fan, but you do have electricity. You can charge your stuff up. You have a room that locks. You have a shower that's actually heated water. So, you're doing fairly decent. Looks like they've recently built some brand new lodges that look really, really nice, but they haven't quite finished them out yet. So in the future, some people will get better lodging than what we had. So miscellaneous costs such as things for your water, food, snacks, and stuff, probably under $50 for the week. We bought some beer and other alcoholic beverages to keep us entertained during the evenings. And we had a refrigerator there so that we could get the stuff nice and cool. We did spend one night in Sao Paulo. So we left the park, the day before our flight and spent the night in Sao Paulo. We were in a 4-star hotel for, I think it cost us $122. So, it wasn't very expensive at all. And then the ape cash, of course, which is priceless.
Oh, absolutely.
No, definitely.
So around $600 to $700 without airfare, I think I spent right at $700 total. And then if you add airfare in there, somewhere between $1,400 and $2,000 is what you'd expect to pay for this.
Wow, that is awesome. So it's really, I mean, technically, you can do $2,000 on a trip just about anywhere.
Right.
I mean, that's not extensively extravagant for something like that. How long did it take to actually get over to Brazil?
It's a 10-hour flight from Houston, direct flight from Houston. So, you know, it's not a short flight. It's as long as going over to, say, France. At least from Houston, it's that's about a 10-hour flight direct to France as well.
And then once you get in Brazil, how far is it to the Ape?
It's about a good 5-hour drive. Once you actually get there, you need to get your car. That took us a couple hours to get the car because of who my friend rented it through. But you know, once we got in the car, it took us 5 hours of driving to get to the park. We got to the park right after it turned dark, so we didn't get any cashing in that first day. I wouldn't expect to get any cashing in the first day. If you're flying in the morning, your goal is to get into the park, not to get cashing in, and that kind of recoup some energy, and then that next day spend that energy the next day on getting the ape cache and started working on the caches in the park.
Now, when you're driving the 5 hours, are we talking freeways? Are we talking roads? Are we talking vine trails? What kind of stuff was that?
It's probably about an hour trying to get out of Sao Paulo, and then it's about 3 hours of a freeway staying on the toll road. You want to stay on the toll road. We actually wound up getting off the toll road outside of one of the cities. I can't remember the name of it. And because the GPS, my newbie was saying, go this way. And it was trying to avoid the tolls. So I was using the free OSM maps on there, and it wanted to try to escape the tolls. That was a mistake. On the way back, we did more of we know the route. We're going to go this way, and just kind of glancing down occasionally on the tablet to make sure that we're still on the correct roads. The tolls were, maybe $10 to $15 total.
Heck, you can do that going west.
Right. So, you know, they weren't exorbitant tolls, and they got you on a road that you weren't sitting behind a truck that's going, you know, 30 miles per hour uphill when you should be doing 60. So, and then the last hour you're on dirt roads trying to get into the park, and which can be interesting, especially at night. they're actually fairly well groomed dirt roads.
And once you got, just out of curiosity, I'm assuming you had a guide to take you to the cache, correct?
Actually, we didn't. So we met. We held an event, the CETO. We held an event and a CETO that morning. We met Junior, who is the person at the park who maintains the caches. He has his caching name is Intervales. He pointed the header of the trail, and the trails are well enough groomed. And you're also looking at the other caches that. It wasn't a problem going and finding them. The biggest problem finding the caches is there's fewer satellites sitting there in the southern hemisphere, and you're bouncing around a bit more than what you normally are. You add that with the foliage, and then the placement of the caches, and some of them, you know, you're bouncing around. But when you have four people, it's not really a big deal. You kind of spread out and you find it. If you're a single person, you'd probably be driving yourself crazy finding the caches. But when you got four of you hunting, yeah, made short work of the vast majority of the caches. Sure.
Okay, and just for the record, from housing to the Ape Cache, what's that hike? I mean, would you drive to parking, or would you just walk out your, you know, walk out where you're staying and just start?
So from where the lodge that we're staying at to the trailhead is probably a mile and a half. So we drove over there. So within the park, we were pretty much driving around when we could, because we were hiking anywhere from 4 to 8 miles every day, with you know, 1,000+ feet of both ascent and descent. Mm-hmm. So you know, when you're talking 100 flights of stairs.
Right,
effectively, you know, you're tired. So you want to drive as much as you can. Mm-hmm. But most of the trails, like I said, are pretty well groomed, so you're not bushwhacking the entire way. You might you have to dive off the trail a little bit to find the actual caches, but you know, overall, you're not bushwhacking. But it's not an easy hike either.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I'm dying to ask, what was it like finding the Ape Cache?
It was awesome. We're going along, and then I heard a beep beep beep, you know, from the GPS units, and I look over to my right, and about 50 feet away, I spot the tree. I recognize the tree from the pictures, and I see the Ape Cache. So I say, found it, and then they all go running up after it, because I was following up behind, and I was recording most of it. I was actually using a time-lapse program on my phone to kind of do the recording of the hike up there. So eventually I plan on putting out a video. So I did a short video recording before we got going, a little bit of the video recording on the trail, and then put it in time-lapse mode after that. And I need to put all that together with a bunch of pictures and stuff.
So okay, guys, you're going to have to stop me because I want everything. So you're going to have to make it so that we don't give away too many spoilers, and yet people are, you know, we're living vicariously through you.
Right.
Because I'm sorry, a 300-pound fat guy isn't going to be making it up 100 flights of stairs in Brazil anytime soon. So what can you tell us without giving too much away for the actual Ape Cache? What was inside? What was it like? Because it was big from the one picture I did.
Yeah, so it's a pretty big container, and let me share a picture here, or screen share, and I know I've got it somewhere. Come on, don't hide from me. Photos.
It was this big.
It was this big, and turquoise, and tie-dye.
So yeah, it's a huge container, and I've got it coming up here. 1 second.
No problem. So I did have to ask why you're okay. It's coming up.
There we go. So that's the Ape Cache. So it's, you know, it's a pretty big ammo can with a dual sided hinge on there, and it had a, you know, nice good size logbook within there that. Actually had a geocoin tucked into the front of the logbook, a geocoin that I also happen to have a exact copy of that geocoin. That's my personal coin with me as well. So we discovered it. It had probably a good 60 or 70 trackables, which we took all the trackables out, and we dropped about 60 to 70 trackables in there. Nice. So we had a bunch of trackables that we brought down, and then what we did is we divvied up all the trackables in the room, kind of went around robin and picking the trackables that we wanted after that. And it had a I don't have a picture of it. It had a stamp in there, and I'm a little disappointed. I wish I knew that it had that the stamp. I didn't have that picture up there in there because I would have brought my letterboxing stamp book and stamp my letterboxing stamp book with it because you know I do a fair number of letterboxes and you know I like to get stamps from things and I didn't realize that it had a stamp in there, a special 8 cash stamp.
Well, now that people know, good to know.
I was going to say next time
if you like that.
Exactly. Next trip, I'll remember to bring it.
Yeah. People who are going to go and listen to this going, oh.
It was in the room. So if I really, really, really wanted it, I could have made the mile hike back and then a mile, so 2 mile round trip hike back to the ape cache if I really, really, really wanted it.
You had to think about it. Why didn't you do it? What's your problem?
I took a photo of it. That's good enough. I'll replicate it.
Oh yeah. By the way, Amy is in the chat room and she just mentioned that you have an awful likeness to Andy in that picture.
Only yeah. He's upright holding the geocache. I'm usually
we love the tie dye.
There you go.
Yeah, that one's hiding the. Don't mess with the geocachers. We know the best place to hide the bodies behind that. So.
That's awesome. Hey, just out of curiosity, I don't know. Is this too much of a spoiler? Is the prop still in there?
No, the prop is gone. It was gone. It was a bull, and it was taken by the first to finder. And that's actually the props were meant to be taken by the first finders. Those are FTF prices. Yeah, but if you go back through the logs. It's in Portuguese, but basically he said he had taken the bull.
That's wow.
So you know it's amazing that this was how many years ago? This was what 10 years ago?
2001.
Yeah.
2001. Oh my god, more than that.
June of 2001 when the ape catches were replaced.
They never did it again. You know.
No, it was strictly for that movie when it came out. For the original Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
And that was it. It was the one big push.
Now, most people don't realize this, but the ape cache where it's located now is not the original location. Back in 2005, Joe GPS went down there and because it had only been found, like, I think, 2 times. And he wanted to make sure that it was still there. He went down there and found it with a couple other people, and then they moved it to this new location. That was back in 2005. I actually looked up the original coordinates, and it's like the difference is only maybe 300 feet, but this is a much better, much more secure location.
And how many were there in your group?
There were 4 of us. Yeah,
that seems just about the optimum amount of people, I think.
Yeah,
it's too much of a circus, too few, you're scratching your heads trying to find stuff.
Right. Yeah, I agree. 3 or 4, I would say, was a good number for that.
Yeah, so, it was a great, great number, and, we had some individuals that were huffing and puffing more than others, going up the trails. But we all made it, and we all survived. So,
did you get any shots before you went for anything?
No, I didn't. It's probably would not be a bad idea to get malaria shots. I've traveled so much, I've had so many shots that it's like I don't need any more.
Mm. And I have to ask you, yeah, that's not something you want to play with. The food there, just out of curiosity, that's another thing I got to know, the bugs and the food. What was the food like there? Anything that was surprising or unique
food,
or
would make you sick?
I consume too much cheese, which
you can never consume.
I'm not lactose intolerant, but I'm lactose sensitive, so had some issues coming home, but the food was great. Usually for breakfast, you had a couple of different choices of hams, cheese. You had some salad stuff, some fruits and vegetables, like papaya and some other melon type fruit, which I wasn't sure exactly what it was, but it was good. Some yogurt, that kind of fare, and then lunch, you would get more ham and cheese, but you'd have rice and beans and some salad stuff, and then dinner. Yeah, you'd usually get a little bit more dinner fare, like some various types of chicken, some types of, you know, I think it was actually a tapir, but I didn't ask. It was either some sort of pig product or they were killing tapirs in the forest and using that. It was pretty gamey, so I was guessing it was tapir.
There's nothing no different there than eating down south here. I mean, exactly. Sometimes guys don't ask.
Now, yes. for food wise, now you say you stayed in a lodge. So food wise, mm-hmm. was there a certain time you had between 12 and 2 to eat, you know, or was it like, did you
yes.
always order food? Was it like a buffet, or was it like you had a menu? Like, I'm just curious about this.
So it was a buffet they have a restaurant within the park, and you have to go to the restaurant. So the restaurant's about a mile and a half drive from where our lodge was to the restaurant, which is, you know, maybe a few hundred feet away from the trail to the ape cache. And that restaurant, everything's laid out buffet style. Mm-hmm. And it also bring out some hot, fresh bread with more cheese that you're supposed to scoop into it for every meal. And it was good. And then, you know, they have soda there as well, and beer and other things that you can buy as well. Or you can drink the drinks that they have there. And they had coffee, which was key for me staying alive. if I don't have my caffeine drip, I'm going to die. It was pretty much a buffet style, but you know, it's not overly expensive, and they pretty much put you on a tap there. I guess I've been sharing that photo for a while now, hasn't I? Haven't I?
But it doesn't sound like you're like out in the middle of no man's
right,
land.
Right, that's what I was going to say.
Saying that there's Walmarts around. Is it standard Walmarts like you'd find in the U.S.? Where
It's a bit like more like a 1970s Walmart, 70s, 80s Walmart that you would have had back then, you know, a lot smaller and stuff. But the closest Walmart to the park is probably a two-hour drive at least. So that's what I was saying. Get that stuff, put in your GPS beforehand, and go there on the way down. There are small supermarkets in Riviera Grande, which is about an hour away, and also Capello Bonito, which is about an hour and a half drive away. And so you can go in there. We actually ate lunch in Capello Bonito during one day. You know, had a pretty good lunch in there, but you just drive around the main streets in there, and when you see Supermarketo, that's the supermarket. It's kind of like a 1970s Safeway in terms of size. But you know, they pretty much have everything that you need in there. You know, you get your water, your drinks, your snacks, what have you, and go from there.
That's awesome.
How are the other caches in the park? I know about the eighth cache, but you said there was like 40 others in there.
Yeah, there was about 40.
Thing, was there any anything cool?
Well, you know, they had a letterbox, where I go, a multi, you know, so they had and several puzzles, so that you know, they had a variety of cache types within there. Mm-hmm. There's some that a lot of them took you to very and for Earth caches. A lot of them take you to some pretty interesting places, and that's pretty much the best thing about them. One took you to an old wooden church. One took you to a stone castle. One took you to a small waterfall. One took you to the big view of the park, which actually you can get 3G data up there at the top. I know this because we couldn't find the cache. And it was like, well, there's supposed to be a spoiler image here. It's like, I didn't download the spoiler image. It's like, well, you know what? Let me see if I can get data since I'm way up here on the top and I managed to get data, download the spoiler image. And the hint was behind the sign. Well, when you look at the picture, which is probably 2 or 3 years old, there is like no foliage except for this one plant that's about 4 or 5 feet behind the sign. Now, all that's filled in. So we were trying to look immediately behind the sign, and it's up underneath this one big cactusy plant. So, you know, after we saw that, it was an aha, you know, we immediately reached up underneath there and found the cache container. But it would have took us a long time searching on top of the hill without having that. But, you know, we found every cache container that we looked for within the park. We found all the caches except for one within the park, which we did not make it to that one particular cache. It was just too much of a hike. We had done so much that first day, and two of my compadres only brought one bottle of water with them, and you know we were sharing our excess water out, and it's like, no, we're not going to go that extra 1,000 feet back that way with who knows how many feet of elevation. And it turned out that after looking at some Google Earth maps and stuff later, it's like, it was a good choice. if they would have brought the two 500 milliliters of water, we probably would have made it without any issue. But when I went with basically a little bit more than 500 milliliters for that entire period of time, I was like, yeah, no, not a good idea.
So with us, we're running just a smidge long, but this is awesome stuff. You only hear this once in a lifetime, seriously. Chad, if you had something that you would tell somebody that's going, you know what, I got to try this.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the suggestions that you want to have for people that would be considering going for the Ape Cache and doing this in Brazil?
Suggestions. And have fun. I mean, that's the biggest suggestion that I can make. Do the puzzles that you can offline. Get those done. Be prepared to do a lot of hiking, and make sure you stay hydrated. It's not going to get overly exhausting. You're not going to get lost out there. The trails are pretty well marked, but make sure you have a traveling companion with you, at least one traveling companion with you, because if you slip, fall, break something, you know, you can be...
Somebody's got to help you out.
Exactly.
I got one more and I'm done. Weather-wise, what was it like when you were there?
So it was the beginning of their fall, and it's actually cooler there than what it is here right now. At least in Houston, we're running in the mid-80s right now. I think it was in the mid to upper 70s down there, and the humidity level was maybe 60-ish, 60, 70-ish. So it was actually really, really nice down there. And then you'd get to the top of the hills or crest of hills and stuff, and you get that nice breeze going, and things were really awesome. So it was really nice. This time of year is really nice down there. So I would say April, May timeframe is a really good time to go, or around the October timeframe, which is the beginning of their spring timeframe, is also probably a really nice time to go. I would not go between, say, November and February, because that's going to be the very hot, sticky season down there.
Wow. Just had a last thing to ask for you, too. Just as far as the trip that you had through Brazil and how you went there, can you give a sense of, maybe on a scale of 1 to 10, feeling of being safe? When you're going through there, were there rough spots? Were parts where you're in the park, you just feel totally comfortable? Anything that somebody may need to know for that?
In the park, I felt very comfortable. In the Riviera Grande and stuff, if I was alone, I probably would have felt uncomfortable. With a group of people, I didn't feel uncomfortable. Sao Paulo, there are definitely spots in Sao Paulo that I would have been extremely uncomfortable that we drove through if I was out on the street. But where we spent the evening, and you know, we walked down through the middle of town to go grab caches and stuff, and felt very comfortable out there. That's so cool. You know, like any Sao Paulo, like any big city, you're going to have nice areas and not so nice areas. I say if you're with a group of people, I don't think anyone's going to mess with you. I never had any anxiety about possibly, you know, like my wife has about, oh no, someone's going to see you as a foreigner and take you for ransom. Nothing like that while in country ever came to my mind.
Awesome. All right, guys, anything else that you want to ask Chad? It's not like we don't see him every week, but I'm just saying.
No, we did a pretty good cover of it, I think.
This is awesome. This is the most thorough I've heard of the Ape Cache ever.
As me too, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, it makes me want to go, but I don't think I want to go without Chad going back. So
exactly.
Make sure you plan to go again.
The word wheeze would definitely be for me. I'm just saying, when it comes to 1,000 foot.
So real quickly, I want to share... These are some of the trails and stuff that we went on here within the park on and Google Earth. And is there somewhere you can host this, Andy? The KMZ file.
Yep.
And people can pull in the KMZ file, then do things like you know, this is the trail to the mission, the blue trail here to the mission itself, and you can kind of see the differences in the elevation, and this is the other trail to the viewpoint. If you right click on it in here, you can you know, show elevation profiles.
Oh, wow.
And kind of go along the trail. But you can kind of see how it's, the cache is down here kind of in the bowl, and you know, kind of get a feel for the different things and go to the track that's after the mission, where we went up to the top here, and so we got a bunch of pictures up at the top, and then kind of went down the back side, and there's another cache over here. I actually put out a cache right around here, which I haven't had published yet, and there's a cache right about here, which it's a Where I Go, which has published.
This is amazing footage, too. This is great. Yeah, we'll put this on the website and have a link to where the file is. I'll put it out.
And this green one here is to the waterfall. And I've got them labeled up here so people can pull in that KMZ file into Google Earth and kind of take a look. And there's if you're online, there's photos and stuff that other people have posted of the different areas. So
that's beautiful.
Get a good idea there.
Yeah.
That is awesome. Yeah, we'll put that in the links. It may take a little bit of time, but it'll be with reference to episode 397. And have that in there. Awesome stuff. All right, guys. Well, man, fantastic show. This has really been good. Folks, thank you so much for supporting the show. Please consider becoming a patron or use our PayPal and throw some bucks our way, and it'll help literally keep the lights on, and we're very grateful for every bit that you give to us. Also, tell others about the Geocaching Podcast so that they can come through and get amazing information like we were presented with tonight with Chad. So, man, awesome, awesome stuff. All right, good stuff. I think it is time to wrap this puppy up. Let's do this thing. Thank you for subscribing to the Geocaching Podcast. Thank you, Lisa, from cache-advance.com. Please be sure to join us each and every Wednesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time for another episode of the Geocaching Podcast right here on the Geocaching Podcast website at www.geocachingpodcast.com/live. The video version of our show is available on YouTube, and the audio version is available on our home website, iTunes, Stitcher, and many of your favorite podcatchers. We love hearing from our viewers and listeners, so please visit us through our social media sites or contact us via our voicemail line at 630-31-VOICE. The Geocaching Podcast is a Head Hard Hat production and is produced by Andy Smith, Scott Burks, Corey Stevens, and Chad Courtney. This show is copyright 2015 by Andrew T. Smith. All rights reserved. And clear. Wow, excellent show, guys. Man, that was great, Chad. Awesome stuff. Yep.
My sound thing crashed halfway through.
Okay. Well, send me what you got.
Yeah, well, here, I could see where it is. It's at the 22 mark. 22 minute mark is where it is.
All right, so go ahead and send me what you have with that, and then I'll mush it in with the rest of it.
Doing it right now.
All right, folks, we hope you enjoyed the show. It was really great, and come on back next week for another episode of the Geocaching Podcast. Be safe out there. Don't get eaten by Anaconda, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye, folks.
Bye.